You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. We've got a pretty cool, actually a very cool episode tonight. It's in regards to T1 Fest. And we've got Jim of Capgun Heroes, who organizes T1 Fest. And we've got Daryl of Bull Weevils, who is playing T1 Fest. Jim and Daryl, thanks for being on the show. But I'm not going to let you talk because we're going to play a song right away. We're going to play Capgun Heroes with you. And then we'll be right back and we will talk to Jim and Daryl.
The wannabe, she don't want to be. The wannabe, she don't want to be. She don't want to be around here anymore.
Jim, how you guys doing? Thanks for coming on the show.
Good, good.
Good, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So what sparked this is I got an email from Katie, who does PR for T1 Fest, and she's like, do you want to debut the news of T1 Fest, the charitable festival that raises money for research and awareness for kids with type 1 diabetes? And there's no way I could say, no, we're not going to help out the kids with type 1 diabetes. So, of course, I said yes. But I'm really glad I did, because T1 Fest is really cool. And that led to me meeting Daryl, who I interviewed. And Daryl had some great great perspectives. And I don't know Jim, but I'm glad to have Jim on the show tonight. We're going to talk about T1 Fest. And we're going to talk about all the cool stuff that's happening. T1 Fest is in Chicago, of course. It's yes. October 10, 11, 12. Thursday is the Jasons. Friday is Gutterouth and Diesel Boy. Saturday is Sludgeworth. And also playing across the 3 days, Bull Weevils with Daryl. Kepi, full band, Reaganomics. Parasites, Take the Reins, Capgun Heroes, Jim Band. Zoonoids, whatever, the Iron Spiders, Violet, Space Age Zeros, the DUI, Sex Stream, and maybe a couple more bands at the famed Reggie's Rock Club. You can get tickets right now online at Ticketweb. And I got to say, 3-day pass is ridiculous. $50, Em. $50 for all that. You can't argue with that.
No, that's
Right.
So anyway, Jim, why don't you tell us about the background of the T1? I don't want to say it's a, I would say it's unique for a punk type organization to say, let's raise money for kids with type 1 diabetes. Usually you see like maybe drug, like drug reform policy or maybe charities for people overseas, but this is probably a unique fest for punk. So what kicked off the whole shindig?
Yeah, so the way it all came about was my friend Joe, who's also the lead vocalist in Cap Gun Heroes, he has two kids that both have type 1 diabetes. It's a unfortunately very common, becoming more common. You're seeing it with a lot of kids now, but it's an autoimmune disease. There is no cure, and they're not it kind of comes on at just certain times in a person's life. Type 1 seems to come on a lot more when kids are younger. Joe's son was diagnosed at the age of 3. They just started to notice that he wasn't acting himself. He was losing weight. He was constantly having to go to the bathroom, just things that were abnormal for a kid his age. And when they took him in, I mean, his sugar levels were through the roof. And it was a, it was traumatic for him. I mean, his diet, his taste buds, things changed and really didn't start to come back for him for quite a while. He's turning 9 now, and he's just starting to kind of get back to normal. Fortunately for Joe and his daughter Gianna, they actually started to notice some of these symptoms one day, and he rushed her in, and her sugars were through the roof. But they kind of caught it so early that she didn't. She seemed to kind of pass over some of the, side effects, I guess you could say, or have some of the symptoms that prolonged with his son. But it's there. Joe has put a lot of time in, him and his wife. They've not only have they learned about what they need to do for their kids, they got educated and wanted to help others. So his kids are thriving. And that's really where we started having these conversations. Look, this is a it's an autoimmune disease that is happening in children. And if there's far too many kids in this world already that don't have proper health care, don't have access to the things they need. And that should, to me, should be never should be the case, but it definitely should be the case for an illness. And we started doing a little bit of research and saw how expensive it was, what it took, for these parents to be able to treat their kids properly. It was just outrageous. I mean, we started hearing stories and learning things where parents can't afford some of the technology that's involved because it's so expensive. So they're just doing the traditional testing of the blood. Well, if a kid's sugar's dropping and he doesn't, and you don't catch the signs, they could have a diabetic stroke. And if you ever talk to Courtney from Take the Reins, her sister almost died from that. That's why they're involved in it. Her sister had a diabetic stroke. Polly from the Bomb Pops, she was on part of the live stream we did a few years back. She's battled it and had some pretty severe cases with it. So, we wanted to get involved, and we were trying to figure out ways to, help out, raise awareness, and do something that we loved, and music was the way to do it. So we started T1 Fest, and I'll tell you, it couldn't be possible if there weren't so many good people in this scene. Because when they understood what we wanted to do, they kind of jumped in and helped us out because we had no clue what we were doing the first year. And there, we got a lot of help from a lot of people who, we some we knew somewhat and hadn't talked to in a long time. Others we had no relationship with all, and they helped us organize this, and now we're going on our 5th year.
Actually, Jim, you bring up a great question, and I want to mention, we're gonna get to Daryl in a second, but Daryl is a medical doctor, which I'm so embarrassed. I didn't know that when I was interviewing the first time. And one of my questions, I was like, "What's something most people should know?" And Daryl's like, "Emergency medicine." No, what's something that you know that most people don't know? Daryl's like, "Emergency medicine." I was like, "Oh, Dad, this guy's a doctor." So we're gonna get to that in a second. But Jim, you brought up something interesting. As you said, the first T1 Fest was a challenge or you didn't know what you were doing. About a year ago, Em and I had the guy from Is for Lovers Fest. And you remember that guy's name? What was that guy's name? You remember his name? I don't remember his name.
He's from Hawthorne Heights. He's the lead singer of Hawthorne Heights.
He has a big festival, and it's called Is for Lovers Fest. And I throw about 3 shows a year. I've thrown about 25 shows or so. And for me, it's a nail biter till the very end, pretty much. But it's especially a nail biter the week before, the day before. We interviewed him, and I'm like, man, are you like going out of your mind like the week before, the day before the show? And he's like, no. I'm like, relax, man. It's all good to go. Jim, year 5, whenever I've thrown about 25 shows, I'm always like, oh, my God, this is so stressful. What's your mindset the week before the fest, the day before the fest, at the fest? Am I wrong in being totally whacked out and out of my mind, or is the Hawthorne Heights guy just too chill? That's my question.
I think he's just too chill. I mean, you know, trying to throw a music fest, even a charitable one, in a top music market where we already have some, you know, just amazing festivals that are going on in the city. It's a challenge. I mean, and I think it's kind of, you know, you have to figure out your schedule, and you have to try to work around what some of the bigger festivals are doing. You kind of got to coordinate and get on kind of a band schedule, because, and then you face, you know, when bands come here, they're, you know, every band that we've had play T1, and a lot of bands that we've met, they're all great people, but, you know, we also remember that they do this for a living. So we don't try to ask them to do something that, you know, would harm them financially. And we've gotten a lot of support by them, but when they come here, you know, they can only come here, you know, maybe every, you know, 6, 8 months, maybe sometimes a year, depending on the band. And, you know, if you take them out of market and they don't maximize their opportunity for revenue, that's affecting, you know, how they feed their families. So, you know, we've had to learn, you know, how to deal with that. And again, we've been very fortunate. I mean, there's a lot of people who help out. Katie's one, you know, who's great. You know, Toby from Red Scare helps us a lot. There's a lot of good people who, you know, who help out and have kind of taught us the way of, hey, you know, try to do this, try to do that. And so, yeah, I mean, we're still going crazy up until the day of the fest and then through it. But it's a lot of fun to do, and we've raised a lot of money. And, you know, we're going to keep doing it as long as we can. So, but, yeah, I think he's way too chill.
I appreciate the direct, and I appreciate, like, you'd expect the answer like, well, for some people like this or some people like that, you're like, no, he's too chill, which I agree with. He's a nice guy, but I think he's way too chill. Daryl, this will be the Bull Weevil's second T1 fest.
Yes.
What do you enjoy about the fest, or what do you think is important about the fest, or are you like, I don't really care about the fest, we're just playing a gig? What's your perspective on T1 fest and making it your second time around the track?
No, I think that, you know, one, to Jimmy's point, the big thing about it is the cause, right? You know, it playing a show is always playing a show, no matter what. But to have a cause behind it, besides just through your own, you know, ego, or, you know, whatever you get paid in punk rock, which of course punk rock doesn't pay the bills. But the money for this, it goes towards, you know, looking for research towards helping individuals with this disease process that is pretty devastating for some, especially for individuals that have poor access to healthcare resources. So, you know, to be asked to do something like this, it's a, like I say, always, it's a no-brainer for me as a healthcare provider to, you know, do something. Also for people that are in the scene that I know and their families, it's a collegial thing. We're all in this together. We all have families. We all understand that we want to do the best for them. And this is, you know, from a family's perspective, reaching out to help multiple families all over. You know, you don't have people always doing things like that, you know, for some odd reason. People are usually in the business of doing music and shows for a very self-centered, you know, reason. Nobody gets into a band because they think that they want to do something that's altruistic and save the world. Even Bono didn't start off in U2 thinking that he was going to become some big humanitarian, right? They were just playing rock and roll. So we're lucky that we have somebody like Jimmy out there, you know, trying to find ways to organize folks and to put together events that one, get the punk rock community together, which is always fun, and get great bands to play. But, you know, really paramount about that, it's all about for a cause that is really, really, you know, wonderful to stand up for. So for us to do it, you know, usually for shows for us, it's just a matter of timing. And, you know, if we don't have the ability to do the show, it's usually because of my schedule as a physician, you know, or something I have to do with my family. Those are the priorities that come into play. But when I have the opportunity to do something like this and Jimmy reaches out, of course we do it in a heartbeat. So like I said, no brainer for me. Has nothing to do with ego or anything to that. I love just performing in the band and playing. That's always great to play in front of our hometown crowd. But for this cause, I think it's just a wonderful thing.
Darryl, you bring up a bunch of interesting points. One point that I want to ask you about is you're a doctor and you work in like the ER unit, correct?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm an emergency physician. Yep.
So first of all, people, you know, you think of being in a punk band is very exciting. I feel like being an ER doctor is probably even more exciting, although much more pressure than being in a punk. Like, is being an ER doctor the most exciting job there is? And I don't mean like fun time exciting. I mean, high energy, high. I mean, exciting is the right word. You know what I mean?
No, I get it. It's you know, the perspective is always different from the person that's doing it. I mean, the old adage of the rose doesn't really see itself as a rose. It's a thorny plant, but other people on the outside see it as this beautiful kind of, you know, organic thing that's growing. You know, as an ER doc, I probably see myself as more of a thorny individual, but other people are like, oh my God, that's so crazy and heroic and all these things, but it's just what I do, right? It's just the thing that I've always done. And I don't always think of it in that way until somebody reminds me of it, right? But it is, you know, a high stress, you know, high energy. The engine always is running when it comes to the profession of medicine. I mean, when you look at the burnout rate associated with professions in medicine, emergency medicine's right there at the top. So for me to do it for the past, you know, 26, going on 27 years is pretty insane. You know, that includes my residency. So, I mean, that's, and to still look as half as good as me right now, and to be as energetic as I am on stage is a testament to myself. And I'm not going to throw ego into this, but the rest of you fools out there better step up your game, because if you realize what I do and I outshine you every time on stage, you do suck. That's what it comes down to. No, it just gives you something to look forward to. You know, I digress and I'm making jokes, you know, but the reality is, yeah, it is pretty high intensity. But I mean, it's kind of like a punk rock show, right? It's the whole adage. I compare, you know, what I do as an emergency physician is a performance in some senses. You have to actually go into a stranger that you meet in a short period of time. I don't have an established relationship with most of these patients, you know, unless it's a recidivist patient who comes in all the time. You know, you have to establish a rapport with the patients. You have to get them to trust you. You have to find ways to make them trust you and find a way to connect with them in a very, very rapid succession. Just like if you were in a, you know, another city playing a show in a venue you've never played, you have to get that crowd, you have to win them over somehow. So I think being in a band helps me in my practice of emergency medicine in some sense, because of the performance aspect of it. And also the, you know, high intensity, you know, portions of it are also kind of like playing in a punk rock band and jumping off the stage and getting into the crowd and, you know, slam dancing. It's all, I think, for me, intertwined. At least I can put it together in my brain that way and kind of have it be cohesive. It works, you know, it seems to work really well. And I'm appreciative that I still get to do both of these things in my life. One plays off the other. The aspect of playing in a band and releasing that energy and releasing the things that are built up in my daily activities as a physician, it's important to do that, or I would probably just, you know, explode. So music's a great outlet. And my ability to express myself in a way that's artistically, you know, challenging, outside of the other left and right side of my brain, putting both together and using both sides, I think is important to make me a full human being. And I feel pretty fulfilled. I'm living a pretty damn good life, I think.
You know, I just, I might be being rude to Darryl, because from in the punk rock world, it's like, wow, isn't it interesting that Daryl's a punk rocker and he's a doctor? But then in the doctor world, all the doctors are like, wow, isn't it interesting that Daryl's a doctor and he's into punk rock? So, do you get tired of talking about being a doctor, or do you like talking about being a doctor? I don't mean to shackle you, you know, with
no,
you know, thinking, you know.
No, I mean, it's one aspect of me, right? It makes me the whole human I am. I mean, that's one part of me. It's a large part of me, but that's not everything about me. And I think that's the good thing. Like, it does have this melding of worlds together. And it establishes something that I think people tend to neglect at times, that they think they can't do things like plan a band or have an artistic side when they're doing something that's so analytical and scientific. And I think that people miss out on a large aspect of their life if they're not doing something outside of what they define themselves as with their profession, right? That's very limiting. And I think that's why there's so many unhappy people out there, because they've limited themselves in some ways, thinking that they can't do something, or they tell themselves that I shouldn't do that because it's not the proper thing to do. It's like, what the hell's the proper thing to do? It's what you are doing, you know, what makes you feel good, what makes you have this fullness in your life, what makes you feel fulfilled, what do you build up in the days? What do you wake up in the day saying, this is going to help me get through the day? If it's your profession, that's great. And sometimes it is that, but it's family, it's comic books, it's, you know, games and silly things like that. But writing music is a great outlet. It can help me express things that I can't sometimes put into words or say to people directly. I then get a chance to say it to people in another fashion. But yeah, it's, I'm never tired of talking about, you know, what I do. I think it's good because I can get it out there so that other people can maybe catch wind of it, and maybe it becomes infectious in some way that they can realize they can do more as well and not feel inhibited or not feel afraid. There's a surgeon that I know who actually, you know, I encouraged him to do more music. He was talking about music all the time, and now he's writing his own little country songs and doing things. And I think that's awesome, you know, and it definitely leads to a lighter feeling about things, you know, especially when we're dealing with these situations in medicine that can be really tragic sometimes. So I want it to be, I talk about it because I think it's a good thing to inspire people to do what I do as well.
Daryl, you mentioned that Bono didn't get any music to be altruistic, which is, I definitely agree with. And in high school, I hated Bono just because he's like, oh, look at all these great charities that I, you know, I'm all over the world doing all these charities. Oh, I got this award. Oh, I got that award. I'm like, Bono's just doing it for Bono. But then I realized, even if Bono's just doing it for Bono, he's done way more for people he doesn't even know than, right, like, say, Jeff, like, what has Jeff Bezos ever done? What has Elon Musk really ever done for others? Like, so, even though I can't stand U2's music, if I have to give Bono a thumbs up or a thumbs down, I'm giving Bono the thumbs up. So, Daryl, are you giving Bono the thumbs up, the thumbs down, or the thumb side to side?
I think that he's used his celebrity in a way that's been helpful to people. That you can, you know, it's the whole adage of with great power comes, there also comes great responsibility in some sense. And I think he can at least epitomize that in some ways. He could still be a complete, utter, you know, horrid human being that I don't know him personally, but at least he's done some things that other people could also do if they wanted to take the time to invest in charities and other things. So, I mean, you have to give the person and applaud them for standing up and doing something, right? That, because most people sit on the sidelines and don't do anything. And they're the ones that are casting all the, you know, vitriol at people. And they should really just shut their asses up, because I haven't done anything.
Well said. Jim, aside from Bull Weevils, who everyone should check out at T1 Fest, even if you don't know him. Honestly, I didn't know a whole lot about Bull Weevils until before this whole thing came down. And now I'm a big fan. I think Daryl's cool. I think the band's real cool. Their new record is real cool. Their first record in like 10 years or 15 years, something like that. It's cool.
It's a long time.
So you definitely should check out their new record. Jim, aside from Bull Weevils, who should people make it a point to check out at T1 Fest? And why is it Kepi Ghouli that they should definitely check out at T1 Fest?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, this is Kepi. You know, he's doing his 40th anniversary. So a lot of years of a lot of really good music. Grew up a big Groovy Ghoulies fan. Love everything Kepi's doing now. So, and you know, I think he's just a, he's a really good person. So definitely want to, they should be checking out Kepi. I mean,
but Jim, don't you feel as though Kepi is an extremely unique and weird dude? And I say this as a huge Kepi fan. He's weird, Jim. He's weird.
Oh, he is. But I think we're all weird in our own ways. I mean, you know, I think, you know, and honestly, that's something I like it in people. I think it'd be boring if we were all the same. I like that everybody's got their things about them. And honestly, I think that's, you know, one of the things with, you know, putting this on, it, you know, kind of brought us, you know, myself and Joe and some others, you know, got us back into this scene that we grew up in, and then, you know, kind of shifted away from for some time, as you know, you go to work and you have families. I mean, my day job is nowhere near the amount of fun that Daryl's is. but you know, it's kind of cool to come back and see, you know, all these highly driven people who are, they're progressing in their personal lives with their families, they have careers, but they also never stop loving music, and they're all creating music, and they're all still doing that. And that's what keeps this kind of scene alive, because yeah, there's some bands, don't get me wrong, it's paying the bills, and they're able to make a living doing it, and that's great. But there's also a lot that, you know, yeah, they might maybe supplement the, you know, supplement the income with it, but they do it because they love it, and they keep you know, writing music. So but I think that, you know, we're all, you know, weird and unique in our own ways. I mean, Kepi's definitely got a lot of that, but I think that's what also drives that music and that sound. I mean, you know, Groovy Ghoulies coming out of that Lookout Records kind of Oakland, well, they're not, you know, that East Bay scene. It's just a very unique compared to a lot of the bands around the label at the time, you know, much more of a rock and roll feel to them. You know, a lot of the, you know, you can, I like that the, you know, what he's into is what comes through in the music.
Yeah, well said. At some of the punk news shows, I used to try to raise money for St. Jude's Children's Hospital, and I just stopped doing it because it was like pulling teeth. Like, we used to do raffles and like $1 raffle tickets, and I had to basically beat people down for $1 for kids with cancer. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to give the kids with cancer my money, and I'm tired of beating these people up. And I was kind of annoyed because, like, if we did like a fundraiser for a bar, which is cool, you know, people would say, "Oh, here's $100 or whatever." But I couldn't get $1 out of people for kids with cancer. You know what I mean? Whereas if it was a bar or, you know, any other thing that might be nice but isn't as, you know, critical, it'd be easier to get money for. Have you dealt with that at all, or have you found people to be very generous with regards to T1 Fest? You know what I mean?
I mean, I think people are very generous, but I think we went about it in a way where, you know, the first year we kind of had some things at T1 Fest that maybe resembled a little bit more of a typical charitable event. You know, we were doing some of the raffles, and we did some of the other, you know, like 50-50 card shit that you see people doing. You know, we kind of got away from that, saying, look, you know what? I mean, we especially after COVID. Right. Because we did the first one in 19, then COVID hit, you know, and so for us, buying a ticket is doing everything that we need them to do. We you know, we're hoping that, you know, T1 Fest is a night out for people that they come to expect. They come, you know, to enjoy it. They count on us to put it on, which is great. But they know that, you know, they're going to. That ticket that they're buying, it's going to go to help a lot of people, but they're also going to come out and be able to enjoy themselves. And that's why, you know, you say $49.99. Yeah. It, you know, we lose money on this fest every year. Right. You know, we set the ticket prices. We get, you know, we get the bands paid, and everything from the ticket sales after that goes to the donation. But there's always little stuff that we're doing. You know, we got to make sure we have Palomas and, you know, carrots in the green room for Daryl. You know, we got to have, but there's just, you know, like marketing, there's little stuff that always comes up, and you know, that's we were, you know, we've accepted doing that. We want to keep the prices low because, you know, we want people to be able to come out, we want people to enjoy it, and you know, we know that is as we're getting further and further from COVID, we're still not, I think, completely away from it from the financial recovery, and so we're happy to keep the prices, you know, pretty low and provide people a good show. But no, we have, I think everybody has been super generous, especially, you know, the bands and all the people involved and the venues. So I don't think we bumped in anything from that side.
I got one more question for Daryl, and then I don't know if Em's got any questions. And if she does, Em will ask those questions. Then we'll play song. We'll come back. We'll hit some news. Daryl, we briefly mentioned this in my email interview with you. Is yeah. Tracks like Resistance? Are you feeling actually Boll Weevils? Are Boll Weevils a positive band, a negative band, or sometimes column A, sometimes column B with regards to the future of the United States?
I think that in general, I think the tonality of a lot of our songs, I was thinking about this the other day, were kind of emotional in some sense. It sounds funny, but I mean, the lyrics are kind of emotionally evoking in some sense. I would never call us emo. We're not, you know, Gage or anything from back in the day, or, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate. But I mean, we're definitely, I think that we have a spin of positivity. I mean, it's just writing about realistic stuff, right? Being a realist when it comes down to things. I don't think that has a real positive or negative connotation. I think the perception of things can make something into a positive or a negative. Everything's just a thing. In all truth, and that's what you have to realize, is everything's just a thing, and what you then put into it, you then kind of make it into a whatever you want to perceive as positive or negative, because my positive could be somebody else's negative. So looking at, you know, songs like Resistance, I mean, it's just talking about generally standing up and finding, you know, realizing there are things that are trying to oppress, right? There are things that are trying to keep individuals from expressing who they are, and there is a right and a wrong, there's a good, because that's what we're trying to morally move towards always, is a good, right? That's a progressive sense of things. Regression has only led to, you know, certain species dying out, right? That you have to have continued growth, and if you don't find that niche and you start growing, your organism will die off, you know, you'll become the dodo. So, you know, progress is key, and people that want to slow you down, you know, it's friction, that's resistance. And you have to push through resistance all the time. That's what a current has to flow through to make it, you know, something light. It has to go through a resistor to get there. So when I think of the Boll Weevils as a band, I'd say I kind of talk about how things are, but always kind of come at the end to say you can always get through this, and there's a better day if you're waking up and you're doing something, you have an opportunity. Because even talking about, you know, songs like Cutting Solution on our new record, that song's about suicide, you know, and you know, the exponential rise in, you know, young people with depression and psychiatric illness and rise in suicide rates. And I see that firsthand as an emergency physician. And it's something that, you know, individuals might find, they think the solution is to self-harm. And that's not really the great solution on things. And you kind of look at it from that perspective of what makes a person do that? What makes a person fall into that mentality, that mindset? And trying to say it exists, but you know, this isn't the way it has to be. And you know, so I would say we are a positive band in the sense that we try to push things and try to end things on a note that says, you're going to make it through this. It might seem bad now, and make it through in everything. Sorry, hit the mic. Everything in the way we live today, you know, people have been suffering in some senses throughout all of time. And with that, you can look back and go, boy, they made it through. So what's different about me? If there's a template for somebody else who's walked through fire, I can walk through fire too. There's no reason why I can't do that. You know, there's great people in history that have dealt with a situation that you think would be unbearable. I mean, look at Nelson Mandela and him. And then you look at that man and the amount of it inflicted torture and pain and hardship that was placed upon that man. Yet he continued to stand up, realize that you really couldn't destroy him in any way, shape, or form. Even if you destroyed his body, you couldn't destroy who he was in the internal castle of who he is as a person. And then becomes the president of South Africa, a place that was built on apartheid. I mean, if somebody looks at our situation and says that, you know, it's insurmountable, I think that that's not true. We're kind of at a point where you've lived in such a cloistered world that any slight becomes unbearable. And I think that's where people have lost a little bit of gumption, because they've never really felt hardship, yet they want to experience it. They have a grievance for everything because they've never really had anything they've had to really be angry about, but they have to create that to feel something. And I think it's, you can be overcome because rationality has to win, right? Being rational is always the only thing that does anything. When has being irrational ever solved a problem for anybody, right? And there's so many irrational behaviors or actions that people take that don't lead to anything except for more, you know, difficult situations to overcome. So the rational mind has to always win out in the end, in some sense. That's at least my belief in that, because I have to use rationality in everything that I do most of the time. I can't, and I'm no sage, right? I completely do irrational, stupid, completely inane things because I'm a human being and I like stupid, inane things like anybody else. But when it comes down to the seriousness of what we are doing as a species, the only way we survive is being rational. The only way that we move forward is being rational. And there's a lot of loud, irrational voices out there right now. But I think people over time have to come back to rationality, because it's the only way you move forward.
How's that for a deep answer, Em? How's that on the Punkies podcast?
It's so good.
Carol providing the solutions to most of the developed world's problems. Em, do you have any questions, or should we play a tune or two?
Well, I just kind of going off of your, Daryl, your answer with the rationality and stuff. When you feel like you're getting more irrational, how do you kind of get back into the rational headspace?
No, you know, it's having good people around you all the time. My wife being one of the people that definitely pulls me back to rationality. I mean, she pushes us to meditate in my house. So the kids have to meditate, you know, and I'll do it when I get the chance. I don't do it. I did it today, which was good. I had a really rough shift last night, so I had to really kind of come back, because there's a moment where I just didn't want, it was like everything that was logical was illogical for a moment. And that happens in emergency medicine. A lot of things you're going, this shouldn't be happening, but it does, because people do things. They're definitely a hold my beer society where they're going to figure out a way to do something that you'd never believe is a true story, but the, you know, truth is stranger than fiction all the time in the ER. But, you know, sometimes you have to take a step back and truly look at your situation and realize, hold on a second, is this action going to bring about an outcome that is good? Do I really need to yell about that? What is it going to solve? Do I need to lose my cool about it? What does it do if I lose my cool? And like I said, I'm no sage. I do it. I've yelled at my kids and it's horrible. And I realize I can't pull that back. And I've, you know, lost my mind in the ER where I'm just frustrated beyond things. But then you look back and go, you know, the only person that looked like an asshole there was me, you know, at that point. And, you know, it's like you, if you take a couple seconds to actually process and really use your brain before doing something, and it only takes a couple of seconds, then you'll probably find out that, you know, maybe I shouldn't even say anything. Maybe I should just sit back and be silent. Why do I have to even respond? You know, before you get on that keyboard and start typing some shit in, you know, before you even do that, why don't you just take a second, look at your hands and go, what else could I do with my hands right now? What am I going to waste? And if you do type something out, you know what you should do? Look at it for about 5 seconds and then maybe not hit send, maybe erase it and just go, not even worthwhile. What's it going to change? Because if you think you're going to really make the universe move by the words you say, I got a couple of things to tell you. The universe doesn't give a fuck about you at all. So just do your own thing and make sure you do your best to try to be you know, do your best all the time. And don't worry about the outcome because you can't control it. Just do your best. And if you've done that, that's the virtue. Move on. That's it.
Well, there you have it. Some words to live by Daryl. Let's play a song off the new Boll Weevils album. The album is called Essential. We're going to play the song Hourglass. And also, T1 Fest is coming up pretty soon. October in Chicago. October 10, 11, 12. And it's only $50 for 3 days. Or if you're a real cheapskate, Thursday's 15, Friday's 23, and Saturday's 23. But listen, just get a three-day ticket, man. It's cheap enough. It's pretty rad. And that's T1 Fest, October 10, 11, 12. We're going to play Hourglass, and we're going to be back, and we are going to punish Daryl and Jim with some new stories. And we'll be right back. Are back, and we're not going to get to all the news stories, but it has been a crazy week for news. We're talking Martin Shkreli and the world's most expensive album. We're talking Ramones suing each other again. We're talking about the Smiths reuniting, but then not reuniting. We're talking about the Ramones suing each other. We're talking about MIA selling ponchos for like $80. Let's jump into the Ramones. So as the listeners probably know, and actually this will strike close to Jim's heart, because on Jim's last album with the Capgun Heroes, they did Do You Want to Dance, which was also covered by the Ramones. So this is right up Jim's alley. I'm going to throw it to M and then I'll throw it to Jim. So anyways, Mickey Lee has filed a lawsuit against Linda Ramone. Last year, Linda sued Mickey. The reason, if the listeners don't know, Mickey Lee is Joey Ramone's brother, and he owns half the estate of the Ramones. Linda Ramone is the wife of Johnny Ramone, and she owns the other half, except for that's not exactly true, because while Linda and Mickey each own half of the Ramones IP, Mickey sold Joey's share of Joey Ramone's and Joey Solo Publishing, which means Mickey technically has a smaller share than Linda with regards to publishing, but not copyright and other contracts related to the sound recordings, not the compositions. Anyways, so Linda sued Mickey last year because Mickey was making a movie about Joey Ramone's early years with Pete Davidson. And Linda said, in order for Mickey to make a film, he has to have Linda's permission about the Ramones. And he said, well, it's not really about the Ramones, it's about Joey, and that's pending. So now Mickey is not countersuing, he's filed a new lawsuit against Linda, which I'm surprised he didn't file this back when Linda sued him. The brunt of the lawsuit is trademark infringement, saying that by calling herself Linda and branding herself Linda Ramone, she is violating the use of the Ramones trademark, which requires the authorization of both Mickey and Linda. And I've got very strong opinions on this, and here's my opinion, and then M will respond. My opinion is everyone always loved Mickey, and they're like, Mickey's Joey's brother. He's a great guy. How dare Linda sell T-shirts off the Ramones? What a jerk. And just because there's one bad guy doesn't mean the other person's good. And you know, good and bad in the civil context maybe doesn't even make sense. But I'm on Team Linda, and here's why. I think it's cool that she sells Ramones T-shirts because that kind of keeps the Ramones alive in people's mind. But I think Linda wins the day overall because if we look back at the Ramones archival releases of the past 10 years, the live albums, the outtakes from the albums, the deluxe reissues, the alternate albums, which have been very well done, it's all quality material. They're not putting out junk. They're putting out stuff that I, as a Ramones fan, want. And for years, Mickey was bashing on Linda. She doesn't care about the Ramones. She only wants money. She, you know, I'm the true defender of the Ramones legacy. But then he went and sold Joey's publishing. And to me, that he loses his credibility. I mean, it's fine. If he just said, I want to make cash, I say, all right, he wants to make cash, you know. But he's always beating up Linda for saying she doesn't really care about the Ramones or Joey, but he sold Joey's publishing. So to me, he kind of loses. This trademark lawsuit on its face, I think, is relatively weak. I mean, she's called herself Linda Ramone for years. Everyone knows that Linda Ramone isn't a Ramone. And I believe Dee Dee's wife also called herself Barbara Ramone during the Remains era, which is the post-Ramones band with Dee Dee, Markie, and CJ for a little while. So were Mickey to be genuine in feeling that there is confusion in the marketplace because it's Linda Ramone, how come he didn't raise that issue with Barbara Ramone 20 years ago or 15 years ago? And I think it's clear why. So the first question is there confusion in the marketplace that does anyone think Linda Ramone represents all the Ramones? I don't think anybody does. And furthermore, I don't think it's trademark infringement because she doesn't sell anything as Linda Ramone. And in order for there to be trademark infringement, you have to be selling something. That's a prerequisite for trademark infringement. So she doesn't sell anything as Linda Ramone. All the things sold as Ramones are sold as authorized by Linda and Mickey. Now, could this be violative of some contracts that neither will use the word Ramone without permission of the other? It might be, and I haven't seen those contracts. And I got to say, I mean, I'm not saying that Linda's a saint. I've interviewed Linda, and she was real cool. A lot of people don't like her, and a lot of people like her. I know Henry Rollins, for example, likes her. I'm on Team Linda here until I see something otherwise. I think Mickey's mad that Linda's trying to beat him up over his movie. And I think maybe Linda might be right in that, like, it's very difficult to tell the story of Joey Ramone without telling the story of the Ramones. And if Ramone's intellectual property requires both Linda and Mickey to agree, I think Mickey needs Linda's permission. And so I'm siding with Linda here, really, at the end of the day, because she's been authorizing some very well-done Ramones things, products, records, and Mickey sold a share of the Ramones. His share of Joey Ramone's publishing. Had Mickey not sold a share of Joey Ramone's publishing, I might have more sympathy for Mickey, but now that he's done that, I don't have that much sympathy for Mickey. M, agree or disagree?
I agree. This is ridiculous, because it's like, how many people just who play punk music in general, like, have a punk name and their last name's Ramone? Are you going to go out and sue everybody who does that? You know, are you going to sue everybody who has like a spin on the Ramones or like covers them or, you know, whatever? No, it's like, it's timed well because you'd blocked something I wanted to do. But I agree with the, he wanted to do the video or the movie about Joey Ramone's life, but he doesn't have those rights anymore. So again, who does it fall to and what happens there? So no, it just, they're just going to keep fighting over all of this.
Nothing.
Yeah. Like it, again, you can do so many good things with the like legacy, especially of people that you loved. So why are you kind of doing this? It doesn't make sense. That's my opinion.
Jim, as a certified Ramon maniac, are you saddened to see the remains of the Titans falling in on each other? Or are you enjoying the battle a la Jerry Springer?
No, I'm saddened by it. I mean, you know, it's, hey, look, it's from both sides. I mean, you know, it's, Mickey just didn't sell the rights, right? He sold them for $10 million. Let's face facts. I don't think the Ramones is a band, all of them together in their lifetime, saw anywhere near that kind of money for what they created. Now, with all of them passed, here's family members who, let's face it, Mickey didn't write a fucking song. He wasn't involved in that. Linda wasn't involved in any of it. But they're now reaping the benefits and they're fighting over a legacy that they had really, they had no involvement in creating, you know, and $10 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. And, you know, I agree though, Linda has, you know, there's been some really cool stuff and I like new cool albums coming out. I like cool shirts coming out and different things because it does keep a band that I think is very important to a lot of us alive, but it's, you know, it tarnishes it by them with their infighting. And the way I look at them is I don't think either one of them are really right. It's a matter of, hey, you know, you sold your brother's publishing, which, you know, you had the right to do. It was left to you, but you sold it for $10 million. You should remember that none of them even saw anything near that while they were alive and be maybe a little bit more respectful to, you know, that. But if she wasn't selling T-shirts, they'd be getting bootlegged anyway. I mean, you know, that's the world we live in today. So what they're going to do if they don't stop this is they're going to make a joke out of one of the greatest fucking bands that ever played, because it's going to become a spectacle of the two of them suing each other. And neither one of them are Ramones. Neither one of them were writing the songs. Yeah, she dated Joey and then she married Johnny and she, you know, she has her role in the history of that band. But if we're just looking at it from the actual members and the people who are creating the music, neither one of them were involved in that, but they are reaping the benefits of it. So, you know, do it with a little bit of class, a little bit of respect for the people that put you in that position, and don't let their legacy be tarnished away by some, you know, stupid, you know, fight. I mean, but it happens when it comes to money. And that's the problem, is now there's a lot of money involved in it. And I mean, to me, I would love to see a well-done Ramones movie, because I mean, the CBGB movie was absolute shit. So let's get a good movie to honor that history. Cause I think lately they've put some, really good, biopics coming out about some musicians in the last few years. So it'd be cool to see one about a band I really care about.
But wouldn't this only be about Joey, right? Isn't that technically what he has to do? But they could be doing it's a Joey Ramone thing.
I think if they could actually agree, they could. I mean, I think you'd have, because I agree with the statement. I mean, how can you create? How can you write have a movie about Joey
and not that have doesn't rest include the rest of them? Right, that's the whole point. I mean, it's all. You know, it's basically trying to bleed out from, you know, individuals who have a legacy and trying to bleed that legacy for as much as these other vultures can that are hanging on. Yeah, you might be somebody's brother. You get $10 million. Money changes you. You know, it changes some people, not everybody, right? It's just that, unfortunately, there happens to be two individuals who have been intimately involved with the band for a long period of time. And they are kind of holding up the legacy for what it is. And as they're holding up the legacy, it's being battered by their pulling on it. It's a tug of war. And they're going to start shredding it apart, as Jimmy's pointing out. So, it's of course, a feast for lawyers. They're going to find some way. And that $10 million will be cut into very quickly by the lawyers as they fight it out. But, it's who has the right to it? Who has more of a stake? I guess if you're giving something away and you think you've had enough of it and you're selling it, I guess I can see your point on that, John, where you're saying that, you know, Mickey doesn't have that right? Because he sold the rights, right? So
well, I'm saying Mickey's for the past 5 or 10 years, he's taken the moral ground, you know, the moral victory. I care about the legacy. Lena just wants to profit. But then he goes and sells the publishing, you see. And
well, so I mean, now, the proof's in the pudding, though. I mean, he profited, right? He did that. I mean, so to say that you're taking the moral high ground, I don't think there's any morality associated with it. It's just about money. You know, to try and argue that, people always do that. They take some moral compass and turn it north and say, if you follow the moral compass, this is the thing. But at the same time, they've kind of used a magnet to change the course because they want to get paid. So I don't think there's a morality involved in it. It's still truly about money, and they'll argue it from the standpoint of, I'm owed this because I'm a blood relative, and this is how this went, and you know, this I'm the only surviving, you know, person who really has a tie with my DNA to this, so I'm entitled to this, because that's what it comes down to. And you're not entitled to anything, you know. Like I said, you know what you're entitled to? You're all gonna die. That's what you're entitled to. Everyone's gonna fucking die. So no matter what, you're gonna argue about this, and you know what you can't take with you? All the possessions you got. As soon as you get the possessions, they're already broken and they're already useless. So just, I don't know, find a better priority. That's a waste of time. It's a waste of fucking time.
There's a title for anyone's next death rock album. What are you entitled to? You're entitled to die.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Entitled to die.
Actually, I'm very interested in Daryl's opinion on this. So MIA.
She's insane. She's completely insane. I'll just say, in my opinion, she's completely insane. And you know what? I mean, people are entitled to their insanity, but to sell it to other people and force them to wear tinfoil hats and everything else is like, you do you. And you know what? Stay in your lane. You're only responsible for your side of the street and your house. Don't bring it to anybody else's house. That's it. just stay in your own house. Keep your hats on. Do what you want to do. It's because we now have this lack of barriers for things, because people think, you know, people used to be very, you know, discreet about what they would do, about how they would handle a situation. Now, because people have lost all ideas of barriers, because if you type it on a keyboard and you say it, you can get away with it. But then if you take it out into the real world, you think you can still get away with it. No, you might get socked in the mouth when you say some stuff. So if you want to wear your hat and tout all your stuff, do that. But now we have this public forum of social media where people can see this. If you just come to the realization that online stuff isn't real, then you can be okay with it. But when people take it so seriously, and everybody sees how good everybody's life is all the time, that's just false. I mean, you really put your best foot forward when you're stepping out. If you step out socially on social media, because that's our new, you know, meeting grounds for everything, everybody's gonna put their best foot forward. No one's gonna show their worst day. You know, people do sometimes post their worst day, and you know, it garners the digital sympathy that you get, which is not much at all, which is very empty. But, you know, this MIA person, it's laughable. And if somebody, you have to, it's sad that we have to take it seriously, and somebody has to acknowledge you and say, everything that you do is okay with us. And it's like, no, not everything you do is okay. That's just it. It's just not everything you do is okay. That's a reality. You're insane. The world's not flat. You know, there is a thing such as gravity. If you don't believe in that stuff, take a short walk off a cliff and see what happens. Gravity's going to get you. So it's good. Your beliefs don't always overcome realities. That's the bottom line.
Actually, Daryl kind of answered my question before I asked, but I'm going to ask him. Anyway, MIA, the rapper who had the big hit Paper Planes, which sampled The Clash, which I guess everyone forgot, but like when she put that record out in like 2010 or 2008 or 2009, like the punk community embraced MIA. You go to any punk show with DJs between bands, they would play Paper Planes. She played shows with punk-ish bands. And she kind of had like an anti-authoritarianism vibe that got her shows. And that, you know, I mean, the course of like an anti-capitalism vibe, the course of Paper Planes was like, give me your money or whatever, whatever it was. And so I mean, I haven't been following my recently, but apparently she doesn't believe in COVID at all. She was full on RFK and now she's full on Trump, which is an incredible about face, I guess, from what she seemed to be in 2008, 2009. But this is where Darryl is uniquely qualified to answer this kind of concept that I'm about to ask him. Is Darryl has been in punk, 30 years, something like that. He's been a doctor almost 30 years. Darryl's got both sides of the coin in that within, you know, the past, well, since Trump, at least, we see kind of very reactionary opinions, you know, COVID doesn't exist. The Mexicans are out to get me. You know, we see that coming from the punk world or the so-called punk world.
Right.
That is the anti-authoritarianism vibe coming from, you know, the anti-science angle, if you will. You know what I mean? How do you see that, Darryl? What do we do with that?
Well, it's more of a dilemma. Problems are 1 + 1 = 2. Dilemmas need strategies to solve them. So you can't just put 1 + 1 together to make that equation fit. You know, I said something. I was in this thing and I talked about what punk is and blah, blah, blah. And I think it, and I even use Elon Musk in that. And I don't believe he is. That's my personal thing. I said it saying that some people have this belief that being contrarian in some sense is punk, right? Because authority tells you one thing. If the wind is blowing, you know, to the east, you're going to go west no matter what. And so in the early phases, you know, when you have the punk scene growing in, you know, in England, and you've got, you know, Thatcher who's in power, and you got this, you know, very conservative, you know, government, of course, the anti-establishment is to be against the conservative ways that things are. And then suddenly when you have this script kind of the pendulum swings the other way, you know, you go, well, the authority is telling me to do this and they're the libs and we're going to own them. It's like, to be punk is to stand up against authority. And that argument is like, you're not standing up, you're doing what authority tells you to, you're not punk, you know. It's like that kind of thing. And so, you know, I came up in the time when, you know, punk was about accepting all of us because we were all on the island of misfit toys and weirdos, right? And so no matter what, if you were outside of what the kind of norms were, you were inside of the punk rock scene. And that included, you know, LGBTQ individuals, that included, you know, people of color, that included, you know, anybody who had something that seemed to be outside of what is considered normal. But now if the norm is to follow a mandate to get a vaccination, of course you're going to say, F that, I'm not doing that. You can't tell me what to do, authority. I'm punk. Then you go into these far-fetched things of, you can make a conspiracy about it, and then you can find a way to justify your contrarian notion. And sometimes just being a punk was just to be contrarian and just to be F you to everybody, right? So everything was an F you. No matter what you said, it was going to be an F you to you, whatever. So I can see where there's this the switch where suddenly you're like, why the hell are people so wacky, right? And it's like, because you've now become the man, right? you've become the authority. You stand with the government. You stand with all these people. So of course you're no longer punk. You got to be against the government no matter what. Okay. Or it's like this. It's a weird thing. If you're an anarchist and you're calling for the general collapse of everything, but you organize your picnic and you know you're organizing that. It's like, shouldn't the picnic be completely not organized and nobody shows up on time? That'd be the anarchist picnic in this true sense. But I mean, if you're out there and you're protesting something, and then say the people you're protesting give in to what you want, do you suddenly congratulate those people and pat them on the back and say, thank you for complying because we had a plan all day long? Or is it just that you just want to fuck shit up and just want to be a general, your wrench, monkey wrench in the gears? So that's the part where there's, it doesn't always fly. Cause I think it's just people want to be fucking assholes and think that's punk rock, but, you know? And so the definition, if you wanted to even define it, who knows what it is. It's just being, you know, who you're going to be. That's what I think it is. It's just being who you're going to be. Sometimes being who you're going to be makes you a real unsavory character. And sometimes being who you're going to be might make you look like you have this moral higher standing or some, in some sense, but just being who you are and standing up for your individual right to be you. Yeah. Say you don't want to believe in vaccinations, then like I said, stay in your fucking house then. Then don't be a part of society then. That's good. You can do that on your own. You don't have to be with everybody else. You don't have to do things with everybody else. Do things on your fucking own. That's the thing. And enjoy that and be cool with it. So, you know, we placate people, we give people, and once again, is it worthwhile arguing with people that have an opinion that will never change? Because trying to change a person's opinion in their belief system, trying to change a person's belief system causes them significant discomfort and pain. You're really trying to pull out that person's soul, you know, if you believe in that. And to try and make somebody change their mind by using logic for beliefs, because beliefs don't have to have logic in them. If you can believe you can fly, you're going to believe that until you meet gravity. And at the end of that, the stop is going to let you know that gravity won. But you won't be able to know that in the end because you'll be gone. So MIA's beliefs are hers. They don't jive with how science functions, which has certain rules. And the thing about science too is we continue to grow and learn more. So things change, and that's okay that things change. It's not hard and fast. It's not ones and zeros all the time. Things evolve. So yeah, I'm not buying anything from her. I don't own Inver Ponchos. I don't, you know, I'm not going to subscribe to it. you know, I'll sell you the anti-poncho is what it is. You know, how's that? It's all about money. Get Linda Ramon and me all lined up. We're going to sell ponchos now. They have Ramon's here on them.
Well, I'll buy Ramon's poncho before I buy an MIA poncho. Jim, I'm not saying you're an MIA fan, but what do we do when artists that we like say whacked out stuff? Are we still able to say, well, they say whacked out stuff or do whacked out stuff, but let's use Jimmy. I mean, I love Led Zeppelin. Jimmy Page almost definitely had a 14-year-old girlfriend for a couple of years. Well, she was 15 eventually, I guess. Doesn't make it much better. So do I stop listening to Led Zeppelin, or do I still say, man, I love Led Zeppelin, but that was not cool what Jimmy Page did? What do we do when another great example, Em and I are always fighting about Morrissey. He said some whacked out stuff. I still love Morrissey's music. I don't agree with the whacked out stuff that he said. Em has totally written off Morrissey and she hates him now, which that's all right.
I didn't like him to begin with.
So Jim, what do we do when our favorite artists say whacked out or do whacked out stuff?
You know, I think it really depends on what they say or what they do, right? I mean, you know, some of the stuff Morrissey said, I mean, I think, you know, depending on the context is like, I don't know if he, I mean, he's kind of an out there guy, and he's made some statements that I think people disagree with, but I mean, like in this case with them, I mean, just supporting Trump is, you know, enough for me to be like, you're an idiot. I think the problem is, is, we have nothing but master dividers on either side. And, I think as Daryl said, you know, look, when I think it is, you know, punk to say, look, I don't want to be controlled, but to say, to think being controlled is by having, you know, scientists tell you how you're going to survive a pandemic that, you know, has come around for the first time in over 100 years. You're not being controlled. They're trying to tell you how to survive this thing that no one was expecting, that no one was ready for. I didn't want to, rise up against that. I wanted to, you know, I was like, hey, I trust you because you know more than me on this subject. You're the ones we're counting on to get through this. So I was happy to take that and get back to a normal life. And I mean, I don't think anything is perfect, but I think since the vaccines come out, we've gotten back to a pretty normal fucking life. Comments like that are just, there's these people that want to keep dividing us and keep us going backwards. And I think she's one of those. And obviously she's supporting Trump, who I think is the main one who wants to do that. So yeah, I think, yeah, that, but I mean, again, nobody's perfect either. So I don't try to judge everybody on every statement they make. Some things I can get past and say, well, mate, you're an idiot, or I don't agree with what you did there. But then there's some things that are just, you know, it's like you could say or do it. It's like, all right, there's no turning back from that. It's like you're just a piece of shit and I'm done with you. I mean, because times are different now. I mean, if you look at it, 30 years ago, things are, you know, were much different and people were getting away with a lot of different stuff. You would never, you know, the analogy of a Jimmy Page with a 15-year-old girlfriend, you know, right? That would never be accepted today. You know, and so it, to me, if I saw, you know, I think it's borderline with Anthony Kiedis, whose girlfriend's 19, you know, he's 55. She's legal, but you know, it's a little strange that someone, you know, at his age, you know, is, you know, that's his target every time he's in a relationship. So, but again, it's, you know, I wouldn't be judgmental on that as much as like, oh, that wouldn't be for me, but again, it's legal. But at 15, I would be like, you're sick bastard and, you know, you should be, you know, put away. So if that answers the question.
Well, there you go. It's been a heavy second half of the podcast. Let's round this up with a fun story. Henry Rollins, about three years ago, I don't know if it was just after or just before COVID, he moved from L.A. to Nashville. And since then, he's been working on a top secret project. And in a recent interview with the Vinyl Guide podcast with Nate Goyer, Henry said he's been investing a lot of his personal money into it, so much so that he doesn't have the money to travel. I mean, he used to travel all the time. Now he doesn't have much money, or so he says, much money to travel. His secret project, he has purchased a warehouse in Nashville, and his secret project requires permission of third parties. And other than that, he hasn't given much detail as to what it is. So let's do blind speculation and guess what Henry Rollins' secret project is. My guess is that it's sort of a punk rock museum, but more in an archival academic sense. That is less entertainment and more as here's the metal plates that were used to press the first Damned record. Here's a poster from the first adverts gig. And then like it'll all be organized and like here's the advert posters. Here's the metal pressing for Clash records, that kind of a thing. I think it will be, like I said, an archive of his massive punk collection, which he's been documenting in his books, Stay Fanatic. And so I think the appeal will be minimal or thin, but very deep as of that appeal. Em, what's your guess as to the Henry Rollins secret project?
I had something very similar, and like he's going to create something to showcase the collection and give it space for everyone to like go and see it. I also think there's going to be some sort of live component. So either maybe like half is the archive and half is a stage, or they're merged somehow. So that would be my speculation.
Jim, what do you think the Henry Rollins secret project is?
To be honest, I have no clue. I really don't.
Jim, what's your opinion on tracking down and hoarding artifacts at first press records? Like, I know a guy that's got Johnny Thunder's boots and he paid a lot of money for him and he's got him in a closet. And I mean, I'm not gonna say it's the worst thing in the world to own Johnny Thunder's boots, but it just, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just some guy's boots. They're not magical. You know what I mean? So what's your opinion? So here's the question. What's your opinion on, perhaps deifying is the right word, what is your opinion on deifying punk rock musicians? That is, these aren't just some guy's boots. These are Johnny Thunder's boots, and therefore they must be treated differently than regular boots. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's really going to come down to that person and what makes them happy. I mean, obviously, if they want to collect those items and they want to spend a lot of money on them to build that collection, so be it. I mean, but like you said, at the end of the day, I think it's, you know, it's just a pair of boots from some guy. But again, I think it's really it comes down to what matters to you, right? I mean, I have some stuff that, you know, that are, I guess, collectible items. But when I look at them, I don't think it's about like, oh, this is of such value because it's this person's and it's this really valuable piece. A lot of them for me are the memories of, you know, that I get from it. And you know, again, I mean, I'm a big record collector. I mean, I have some, you know, some really cool pieces that, but I don't think I'd ever be someone who would spend a lot of money or more importantly, a lot of time trying to go and find a bunch of, you know, items from people that, I mean, I don't know, that really wouldn't move the needle for me. But I think it's cool if it does for someone and it makes them happy.
What's the crown jewel in your record collection?
I have an original pressing of Nirvana's Bleach.
A white vinyl or pink vinyl, whatever it is.
I want to say it's white.
There you go. Very rare record. Nice choice. Daryl, what is the crown jewel in your record collection, and what do you think the Henry Rollins Secret Project is?
Crown jewel in my record collection is original pressing of Back from Samoa from the Angry Samoans. So that's my crown jewel. I got that from a good buddy of mine. So love that record. That's one of my first punk rock records besides this record as well. You know, my first thing got me to punk rock, but, you know, what do I think Henry Rollins' project is? It's either one of two things. It's either he is, bringing back the Saturn car as a solar powered vehicle that'll be run by the Rollins sun that's tattooed on his back. Or it's an AI project that will be, you know, Rollins run that will do spoken word all the time for folks that will help you to solve the world's problems. That's what I think it is. He's investing all of his money into that. Then he's got to get third parties involved. So he's talking to all the tech players and all those folks to get it done. So that's probably what Rollins is doing.
But Daryl, how is a Rollins AI that does spoken word all the time that tells people how to solve problems? How's that different than the regular Henry Rollins? Bam. Anyways, Daryl, Jim.
It gives Rollins the time to travel again because the AI does it all for him, so Rollins can travel. That's why he's not traveling now. So it's all going to work out for him. He's got his priorities right. Come on.
There you have it. And actually, be sure to read my interview with Daryl on Punk News, the written interview, where Daryl contemplates the concept of priorities in a very, well-done manner. So anyway, Daryl and Jim and Daryl, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been a lot of fun. T1 Fest, October 10, 11, 12 in Chicago. Daryl is going to be playing with his band, and Jim's going to be playing with his band, Bull Weevils. Is going to be there, and so it's going to be a real cool. And Cap Gunners are going to be there. That's the 5th annual T1 Fest. Also, the new Bull Weevils record, first in a long time, Bull Weevils Essential, out right now. You can get it on CD and LP and digital. Jim and Daryl, anything else you want the listeners to know about? And thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you want them to know about or check out, or any closing words?
Go ahead, Jim.
No, I mean, I thanks for having us on. I appreciate it. We're hoping to see everyone out at T1. It's we feel it's going to be another great event, and you know, we're looking forward to continuing to put these on. So appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, I mean, T1's going to be a great fest. Come out, you know, October 11th. We're playing that Friday night with Guttermouth and Diesel Boy, and then we got some other shows coming up too. There's the Red Scare's got 20 years coming up. We got a record coming out on the 6th of September, the Red Scare 20th anniversary record's coming out with a lot of good bands, shows coming up all over. So Punk News will talk about it probably at some point. I think, you know, Red Scare's all over the place. And just, hey, just be good to each other out there, because, you know, all we have is each other. So just be good to each other.
Well, there you have it. So definitely at T1 Fest, be sure to check out Bull Weevils, check out Cap Gun Heroes, and check out Kepi, the band, the full band. I think B-Face is playing with him, and I think he's got a drummer that he's had with him for a couple of years. Let's close this on out with Groovy Ghoulies, which you'll probably hear the song at T1 Fest. Carly Simon, Daryl and Jim, thanks a lot, and we will see you all next week when we've got Daryl Crover of the Melvins. But until then, be sure to go to T1 Fest. Thanks again,
fellas. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Things are coming.
it was.